Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you, my friend? Welcome to your first coaching call. How are you, mate?
I'm doing good. Doing
Yeah.
good. Hope
How's the
you're
first
well.
couple of days been?
Sorry?
How's your first couple of days been?
Been good. Been good.
Yeah. Good. 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 Evening, everybody. Evening, Des. How are you, my friend?
Good, Dan. How are you, man?
Yeah. I was just saying to Sir, I don't know how you guys stay up till 11 p.m. UK time for this, mate. I'm all caffeine. I'm all caffeined up and ready to go, but it's way past my bedtime.
Had a little power nap at 10 o'clock, so
Yeah.
did it.
Hey, Matt, how are you, brother?
Hey, what's going on, my man? Nice to see you.
I seem to speak to you all the time via text, but it's been a while since I've seen your pretty face, mate. How are you? Okay.
Yeah, been doing well, man. Workouts are
Good.
good. Life's good.
Good, good, good. Right, we'll just give it a couple of minutes to wait for everybody else to come in. So anybody, if possible, just so I've got visibility, just if you can click your camera on if you're adequately dressed and in a good location. So yeah, if you can, guys, put your cameras on so I can see you all and welcome you all in. Hey, Lewis, Paul, how are you guys? Okay. Vamshi, TK, good to see you again, mate. I'll be seeing you in person very soon in Costa Rica.
Looking forward to it, mate.
Okay. How are you, my friend? You okay?
Just finished a workout, cooking a meal now.
Are you in the UK?
Yes.
Finishing a workout at 10:30 p.m. Are you feeling okay? I'm telling on you. I'm telling Coach Gav, mate. You shouldn't be
He
finishing.
knows. He
We're going to
knows.
talk about de-stressing tonight, and you're not going to be de-stressed after working out at 10:30 at night, my friend. Hey, Chad, Dustin, Adam, and Lucian. Right, so not wanting to take up any more of your guys' time, what we'll do is we'll get started, and then I'll admit the guys that are coming in. So just before we start, I've just spoke to Sarah, and I know a few of you guys already on here are coming to Costa Rica, but she's going to be holding a call and sending emails out to those guys that are interested. So if you are interested, please do just put a message in the chat, or alternatively, speak to Sarah. And she'll get some more information across. It is fast approaching, and it'd be great to see as many of you guys there as possible. If you want more information, as I said, Sarah's got plenty of information when it comes to Costa Rica, and there will be calls, a call later on this week, kind of explaining what's going on and essentially what you guys have got looking forward to. So I know TK's already signed up, so the itinerary and everything will be going out in the next 24, 48 hours, I would imagine. So yes, so we're going to move into the call today. So as you guys will have seen from the topic, we're going to talk a little bit around understanding the role of mental, well, understanding the role of testosterone in mental health. So as you guys that have been on these calls with me before know, I love a slideshow. So I've got a slideshow for you guys. So if you give me a second just to get everything loaded up. Right, let me move that across. Can everybody see that okay? Yeah, perfect. So again, the aims, because we're running testosterone month this month, most of the calls around this month are going to be based around testosterone and its role in training, nutrition. And I'm going to start off the month with just giving you guys a little bit of insight into kind of how testosterone can affect mental health. So we're not going to go down the solid mental health route. What I've decided to do this evening is essentially give you guys a bit more information on obviously the brain. So we know obviously the brain is going to be the overriding factor in a lot of our decision making, thoughts, processes, and it's a main hub essentially in regards to the connection to the rest of the body. So how we're going to work today is basically I'm going to start off by just talking you all through what is a neurotransmitter and essentially what they are, and essentially their role in regards to the brain itself and the body. Then we're going to go into a little bit about understanding how testosterone's role on transmitters work. So looking at kind of increase, decrease, positives and negatives, depending on levels of testosterone and their role in regards to neurotransmitters. We're going to have a little bit of look at a few different things around kind of understanding their role in cognitive function and decision making. And then what I'm going to finish off with is give you a few strategies to focus on, all of which I hope you guys that are in the coaching process are actually doing at the moment, but just to tie in everything at the end in regards to kind of action steps that we can be doing to be making sure we're protecting our brains, our neurotransmitters, and most importantly, making great decisions. And again, having a positive outlook. Those of you guys that have spoken to me previously know I'm all about mindset. I'm all about psychology and just understanding the links between reaffirming positive thoughts. So there is a big thing in the industry in the world at the moment with just be positive, just be positive. But I'm a big believer that it's a thought-derived process as opposed to just being positive. So understanding the mechanics behind it. A few of the supplements that I'm not going to talk about today. I believe Coach Greg will be talking more about supplements later on in the month, but just understanding the role and responsibility of chemicals in the brain, which are going to kind of play a massive effect in regards to your action. So it's not just your actions around your training and your nutrition, but actions around your life. Again, those of you guys that have heard me speak before, I place a massive emphasis on this journey being an inclusive journey. And it's not just about you guys getting into great shape. It's a positive impact you can have on friends, families, and the world around you to kind of pass on knowledge and, most importantly, create better men, which is our vision at Muscle Intelligence, and making sure that the impact that we're having, not just on ourselves, but everyone else around us, is going to be long lasting. So we'll jump into what are neurotransmitters. So what we're going to look at is different types of neurotransmitters. So we've got the excitatory neurotransmitters, inhibitory transmitters, and modulators. Okay, so what I'm going to do is just give you the names of them and give you a short kind of breakdown of kind of what they are. So as always, if anybody wants to ask a question, I don't want you to wait to the end of the slides. Please do just kind of unmute yourself because I can't physically see all you on my screen with me having the slides up. Just unmute yourself, stop me, and then ask a question. So all questions are welcome, guys. So for those of you guys that don't know, neurotransmitters essentially are chemical messages that our neurons will typically use to communicate with each other. What do they communicate with? It's going to be pretty much all muscles, all glands in the body. These chemicals are pretty important functions in regards to things like the nervous system. The benefits of having positive neurotransmitters are going to be things like including mood regulation, things like thought processes, movement, and also pain sensation. So what happens with a neurotransmitter? I always use the explanation. Can you remember? A lot of you guys will be able to remember. Remember when you was kids and you used to have a cup and essentially you used to have a piece of string talking to one side of the cup and whoever was at the other side, they could hear you. That's pretty much the role of a neurotransmitter. So basically what happens is neurotransmitters are released from a neuron. They cross a small gap, which is called a synapse. And then essentially it binds onto receptors onto the next neuron to convey signals. So with me saying a kind of chemical messengers, they are literally kind of talking all the way around your body. So the interconnecting nature of neurotransmitters are vitally important for both psychological and physiological factors. Okay, so they're basically as signals to think simple things like contracting muscle and to essentially pass messages around the body. Just admit Steve one second. Okay, so moving into kind of neurotransmitters. So we're going to start with excitatory neurotransmitters. So what you'll see at the top there, these neurotransmitters are essentially going to increase the likelihood that the neuron's going to fire an action potential, whereas the inhibitory neurotransmitters reduce the likelihood. So how we try to look at it is kind of go and stop. So your excitatory neurotransmitters are go and your inhibitory transmitters are stop, where your modulators are pretty much that connect in the middle. So we're going to start with the excitatory. So first and foremost, we've got glutamate. So glutamate is an abundant excitatory neurotransmitter. It's basically an amino acid, okay? And it plays a really key role in the body, particularly in the brain. So it helps neurons communicate by transmitting the signals across the synapses. So everything that I explained that a neurotransmitter is pretty much glutamate. With it being one of the most abundant neurotransmitters, it is critical for things like learning, memory, and overall brain function. Okay. Next up, we have acetylcholine. Okay. So acetylcholine is typically involved in things like muscle activation and is paramount for the autonomic nervous system. So you guys have heard about the central nervous system, sympathetic, parasympathetic, but the overriding factor of that is your autonomic nervous system. It can also play a role in learning and memory, and it's basically a key player in the CNS and basically the peripheral nervous system. The acetylcholine as well, going a little bit away from a brain, is essential for things like muscle activation. So it's released from motor neurons and binds to receptors on muscle cells, initiating a connection, okay, that leads to the said muscular contraction. So you may have heard your coach speak about acetylcholine. You may have heard about it if you do study and you've listened to some of Ben's stuff. So it's a vital part of muscular contraction. So not just the brain, but the body has a requirement of these neurotransmitters. So they're the excitatory. So now we move into the inhibitory. So we've got GABA, okay, which is abbreviated to GABA-aminobutyric acid. Okay. It's one of the main inhibitory neurotransmitters, and it's what that's going to do. It's remember when I said inhibitory, it slows things down or it's a stop. So GABA is essential or critical for reducing neuron excitability and basically preventing overstimulation, which again can contribute to basic conditions like anxiety and stress. So you again, as from a supplementation standpoint, you may have heard of GABA and glycine being recommended in sleep protocols. This is the reason, because it takes you from a overexcitable position and it brings you right back down. So moving on to glycine. Glycine, again, those of you guys that have heard of it, is a simple amino acid and it's a non-essential amino acid. And what that means is the body should and can produce it on its own. It's typically produced in the central nervous system, particularly in the spinal cord and the brainstem. So what glycine will do, it'll help modulate motor and sensory pathways and can sometimes, in some cases, regulate movement as well. So as you'll see with those four neurotransmitters, you have your uppers and your downers. Okay, so having a nice blend between the two is important because there's going to be times in your life where you need to be stimulated. We need to be in that fight or flight mode, which is obviously sympathetic dominance. And then in other parts of your life, i.e., going into the evening, sleeping, we're going to require those inhibitory neurotransmitters like GABA, like glycine, and the kind of rest and digest system to really be kicking in. So moving on to your modulatory transmitters. So as I mentioned, we have your excitables and your inhibitable neurons. The modulatory neurotransmitters basically are right in the middle of the two. So kind of these are often kind of through long-lasting changes in neuron sensitivity. So these are probably more of the neurotransmitters that you will have heard a little bit more about and do get a little bit more pressed. So starting off with dopamine. Okay, so we all know that dopamine typically plays a key role in things like pleasure, motivation, reward, and motor control. It can help regulate mood, okay, alongside obviously focus and attention. It's often gets called kind of the feel-good neurotransmitter. So when is it released? It's often released during activities that bring pleasure or satisfaction. So eating, socializing, accomplishing goals, kind of sporting events, those sort of things are typically when kind of dopamine is released. I'd say that it's quite essential for reinforcing behavior as well. So when we're looking at behavioral change, moderating and not overstimulating with dopamine is going to be important because of the effects of making us feel rewarded. So I always think that kind of dopamine itself kind of are essential for when we're looking at kind of motivational change. Dopamine is one of the important neurotransmitters that we need to kind of be very aware of, because the caveat to dopamine is if you have got really significant imbalances in dopamine, they can be associated with things like addiction. So kind of there is a positive and a negative to these. So making sure they're balanced is going to be super important for that positive mental well-being that we're looking for. Moving down to serotonin. So serotonin again can affect mood. Typically, serotonin can help regulate your sleep-wake cycle as well. So kind of it's one of those where kind of making sure we're managing serotonin around periods of sleep and rest is going to be super important. Also, with serotonin, it helps regulate feelings of satiety. So those of you guys that are kind of on low calories or even on high calories, kind of serotonin itself will help kind of the feelings of satiety. With serotonin itself, I think it's roughly 90% of actual serotonin is produced in the digestive tract. So its relationship with appetite and digestion is going to be super important. Again, looking at the caveat to that, low levels typically can be linked to things like depression and anxiety and those sort of things there. And then the last one in the modulatory transmitters is going to be norepinephrine. Okay, so norepinephrine is essentially it's essential for your body's fight or flight response. So going back to what I said a second ago, we have your nervous system, so your CNS. So we have your fight or flight, rest and digest. So again, norepinephrine is, or it can be called noradrenaline as well, is essential for the body's fight or flight or that sympathetic response. So things that it can affect, things like arousal, focus, and reaction times. Its involvement in the stress response by increasing alertness. So we know when we are sympathetically stimulated, what happens to the body? Kind of our body's sole goal is to escape or flee whatever the perceived fear is. So what happens is blood rushes to the extremities, everything clears from the central kind of portion of your body to allow your body to make you as light as possible to flee. Okay, so it's basically kind of going to help alertness, attention, and basically preparing the body for action. On the opposite side of the coin, low levels of norepinephrine have been linked to things like, again, depression, can be things like ADHD in more severe cases, while high levels can be associated with things like anxiety and stress. So, as you can see, there is positives to having high levels and low levels, but most importantly, trying to keep these all modulated and balanced and not kind of letting any of them drop or overstimulate these systems is going to be vitally important. So moving into other types of neurotransmitters, we've got a couple, and I thought these would be important to mention. We've got your endorphins. So endorphins themselves are typically released in response to all different activities such as exercise, laughter, eating, and can be released in the events of pain and stress as well. Endorphins themselves promote a sense of well-being and relaxation. They help to reduce anxiety and depression. Within exercise, aerobic activities like running, you guys have probably heard of it. And those of you guys that run, I'm not an avid runner myself, so I've never felt this, but I'm led to believe those of you guys that do run, it's associated with things like the runner's high. So that stimulatory feeling when you finish a run, that will li literally be kind of your endorphins. So that state of euphoria that people talk about, linked to kind of the release of endorphins. In addition to improving mood, endorphins can also reduce pain perception. So making them a very important component with things like pain management. So they essentially work by binding what is called the opioid receptor in the brain, which can block the sensation of pain and induce the feelings of pleasure. So those of you guys that have had any injuries, I know Des has, we spoke about this before, but I've had a few soccer injuries. I ruptured my Achilles a few years back now, and when I first did that, kind of the pain really wasn't there. Kind of I didn't feel any pain. I felt it go, but I didn't feel massive amounts of pain. I was able to walk off a pitch, limp off a pitch. But then when I relaxed and those endorphins started to drop down, the pain kicked in. So any of you guys that have experienced pain, then endorphin is kind of a pain modulator as well. And then lastly, we're moving into histamine. So histamine is basically a chemical that's typically involved in an immune response. So any kind of a high histamine will typically, if anybody has allergies and those sort of things, kind of digestion, regulation of physiological functions, and kind of any of those of you guys that have had any sort of allergic reaction and suffered any sort of internal inflammation after that, that is typically a histamine response as well. So they're all of your neurotransmitters. Again, it's important to know that each neurotransmitter's action depends on the receptors it binds to. Okay, some being faster acting, which we mentioned, and others inducing a little bit longer term effects on things like the brain and the body. So this intricate system kind of is essential for maintaining relative homeostasis, which is obviously just your balance, in a lot of different physiological, but most importantly for this call, psychological processes. So the importance of neurotransmitters in regards to its translation to things like feeling, positive reinforcement, internal dialogue, and those sort of things are going to be vitally important. So I hope that makes sense. I'm going to pause here for a second just before I move into testosterone's role in neurotransmitters. Has anybody got any questions at this point? No. Good. This, again, like I said to you guys, don't be afraid to speak up, because sometimes when you do have questions, you'll quite often find that the question that you're thinking about, somebody else in the group is thinking about it as well. But if you do have questions, please unmute yourself and just ask. So moving over to testosterone's role in neurotransmitters. So what I've done for the benefit of this slideshow is kind of listed everything in some, because I know I tend not to put a lot of text on my slides simply because I want you guys to listen. I find that kind of listening rather than just reading text actually conveys a message a little bit better. But just for the benefit of kind of the second parts of these slides, I've just put essentially what I'm going to be saying on the slide so you can see that testosterone's role in those neurotransmitters that we've just spoken about. So moving straight into dopamine. So testosterone typically can increase dopamine and dopamine receptor activity, which creates that sense of enhanced motivation, rewards, sensitivity, and risk-taking behaviors. We're going to delve a little bit into risk-taking behaviors a little bit later on in regards to mental aptitude. But again, testosterone has a positive and it has a negative toward the transmitters that we're going to speak about in regards to the levels. I always talk about testosterone being kind of, well, we know it's a master hormone when it comes to everything that you guys are trying to achieve, but don't underestimate the fact that kind of, yes, low testosterone is something we don't want, but we have to be looking proactively at not taking our testosterone. So anybody that's having exogenous testosterone that's on TRT, it's going to be important from a neurotransmitter standpoint that you guys are having the right amount and you have the correct dose to ensure that that balance of what we spoke about, which is so important, is maintained. Again, high testosterone levels can be linked to improve things like mood and energy due to dopamine's role in mood regulation and reward processing, which we spoke about a little second ago. So moving into serotonin, again, testosterone's role with serotonin is slightly more complex. So it has been shown in some studies to reduce serotonin levels, which basically will explain why why high testosterone can be is associated with things like aggression and irritability. So as I just mentioned, it's important to get the right balance, because if testosterone is too high, which is bottom out serotonin, potentially irritability, kind of poor decision making, and all those sort of things are going to play a factor in kind of daily life. So as I said at the start of this talk, I don't want you to think about just testosterone and neurotransmitters' role in training and nutrition and just solely decision-making around the process that you guys are currently in. Think about it as a broad stroke in regards to life, because when we talk about stress, when we talk about the effects of stress and those sort of things, they apply to every caveat of your life as opposed to just when you're training and obviously when you're eating your food. So testosterone, again, it can stabilize mood by balancing serotonin under specific conditions. But again, there's a few factors that depends on. So things like your baseline serotonin, again, if you are taking any exogenous testosterone, and basically everybody's individual neurochemistry. So we know no two people are the same. So it might be that you have low serotonin as essentially kind of as a baseline. So it's important to be looking at these things in regards to being able to, one, reduce potential aggression and irritability, but most importantly, stabilizing mood, because we know we don't want that kind of up and down. Because if we have an unstable mood, what's that going to do to the central nervous system? You're going to be very sympathetic dominant, which again, if we spend too long in that sympathetic nervous system dominance, again, body's going to retain more water. So your body's going to be pro-inflammatory and it's going to protect itself, which means your rate of progression is going to be slightly slower. Then moving into GABA. Okay, so basically testosterone can modulate GABAergic neurotransmission, which basically plays a role in anxiety regulation. So by enhancing GABA activity, testosterone itself may contribute to a reduction in anxiety and an increase in calmness and confidence. So you'll typically find that kind of people with slightly lower testosterone kind of often kind of may struggle to sleep. They may struggle with kind of things like, again, confidence themselves. So low self-worth, low self-efficacy, and all those sort of things. And it's not saying that kind of testosterone is going to be directly responsible to increasing GABA, but just understanding GABA's role within the system. And obviously testosterone may be a benefit in that process. So moving back into glutamate. Okay. So again, testosterone typically can modulate glutamate receptors, particularly regions like the hippocampus. Okay, so for those of you guys that don't know, the hippocampus itself is basically a part of your brain that's responsible for memory and learning. It's a very small structure that helps you remember. So it's got a role in remembering both short-term and long-term, and it also helps you gain awareness from your environment. So there's going to be a couple of parts of your brain that I'm going to talk through in this slideshow, but what I'll do is I'll stop and explain what each part is, just so it gives you a little bit more context as opposed to me just riding over it. So again, hippocampus is part of the brain that's responsible for memory and learning, short-term, long-term, and to gain awareness from your environment. Okay, so in regions like the hippocampus, so modulation is linked to cognitive processes, including memory and learning. So going back to the role of the hippocampus itself. Okay, excess testosterone, however, might disrupt glutamate signaling, which could potentially impair memory or increase aggression. So we're seeing the same reaffirming kind of negatives potentially to over-increase testosterone, which is why I always talk about kind of homeostasis and finding that balance between everything. So moving on to norepinephrine, again, testosterone can enhance norepinephrine activity. Increased norepinephrine may contribute to heightened physical and mental energy that testosterone can provide. We know, obviously, metabolic rate and all those sort of things are going to increase with the right amount of testosterone, but it's going, again, it can. And notice how at the start of all these points I put can, it's not a definite. So just increasing testosterone solely may not have the desired rate, but it is a possibility in regards to those neurotransmitters. So again, the norepinephrine, going back to what we just spoke about in regards to the nervous system, the effect is also related to the fight or flight response. Typically, higher testosterone levels may make individuals more prone to respond to stress with increased assertiveness or aggression. So see what I've put there in both aggression and assertiveness. There's a thin line and a line between assertiveness and aggression when it comes to decision-making, which we're going to speak about a little bit later on. Again, going back to self-confidence, self-worth, and self-efficacy, what we want to be able to do is be very objective with our decision-making. And when it comes to this process that you guys are going under, training, nutrition, and just things like kind of creating healthy habits and sticking to the plan, this is where kind of it's important to make sure that how we're acting and the decision we're making is with assertiveness, and essentially kind of being very clear on our desire, which ties into goal setting, which we're going to speak about in a little bit. And then Lastly, we've got endorphins. So again, testosterone may also increase endorphin release, contributing to pain tolerance and a positive mood. So you're seeing a lot of reaffirming kind of things that come up with the role of testosterone in certain neurotransmitters, mood, energy, decision making. So they all play a role. So I can't stress enough in regards to the neurotransmitters themselves, how important it is to continue working on improving that testosterone. And again, your coach will talk about it kind of regularly getting your testosterone checked. So again, with all my clients, I try to make sure they do blood work once every 6 months. And I know all the other coaches do as well. So kind of, if you haven't had any blood work, kind of getting blood work done as a matter of urgency, just to see what's going on internally, is going to be vitally important. So as coaches here at Muscle Intelligence, we will create you the best physique that you've ever seen. You follow the plan and we will get you outstanding results. But what we can't see is what's going on inside. And when we talk about a transformation and kind of composition changes, it's important that the internal part of your body is working as efficiently and effectively as the external part. As you hear Ben talk about all the time in regards to longevity, kind of the internal systems of your body are what's going to be a big determining factor in your longevity. So being regularly getting checked and understanding where kind of all the hormones within your body are, and kind of making sure that they're all, again, balanced and kind of in good places, is going to be a bigger marker of longevity than just any sort of aesthetic view as well. So we always talk about getting you into great shape, both emotionally, mentally, but also physically as well. So that's it for testosterone's role on neurotransmitters. What I'm going to move into now is looking at a few, basically the links between testosterone, cognitive function, and mental resilience. So again, what I've tried to do here is just talk through a few points that I think are important in regards to kind of what we're looking at in regards to cognitive function and the mental resilience that you guys are all looking to achieve around decision-making. So starting with, I'll just admit somebody, everybody keeps popping up in regards to coming in. So what I've tried to do here is give you a few key findings on how testosterone itself can influence cognition itself and decision-making. So testosterone is typically linked and can be linked to greater risk-taking behavior. So with individuals that have got elevated testosterone, it can sometimes make them more willing to engage in risky choices, likely due to kind of its influence on the reward processing areas in the brain, such as the amygdala. So the amygdala is basically, it's a small almond-shaped part of a brain that plays a key role in processing emotions, especially fear, anxiety, and rage. Okay, so higher testosterone has been kind of linked to kind of its influence more so on the amygdala, which has a massive turnover in regards to the processing of emotions around fear, anxiety, and rage. So increased risk appetite, again, and the links between testosterone is going to be super important. Then we move into kind of the main points of risk appetite, which I've put in there, impulsivity. So impulsivity kind of is basically kind of when you've got higher testosterone levels, it's going to be associated with quicker and faster decision making, but can also, on the opposite side, lead to impulsive or less carefully considered choices. This will typically be down to, and all the study I've done around this, it's going to be its effects on the prefrontal cortex. So what is a prefrontal cortex? It's basically thought of as the personality center of a brain. Okay. So it's a cortical region that makes us uniquely human. Okay. It's where we process our pretty much moment to moment input from surroundings and external environments. It allows us to compare that input to past experiences. So when you're looking at behavior, okay, what we typically will do as human beings at the start of any process, our desired goal is to revert to type. So those of you guys that, I know you quite a few of you guys have been with us for a while now, but those of you guys that started off a process, probably found the adjustment to the nutrition and sticking to the habits that your coach has asked you to do very difficult. That's because kind of typically what we will want to do is we'll want to revert to type. Okay. So with this impulsivity, our need to revert to type finds us struggling to change behavior. So it takes repeating of a pattern quite a number of times to be able to actually optimally change habits. So I talk to clients a lot of the time in regards to management of expectations, because a lot of people come into the process expecting, after 20 years of unhealthy habits and unhealthy patterning within the brain, to just be able to flick and switch and change. Some people are capable of that, but with the allostatic load, which is just the all around load of what people have going on in life, it's quite often not that easy for a lot of people. And you have to be very strategic with where you place stuff into the program to create significant change over time. Because a lot of people expect to create a whole raft of changes in 12 weeks, yet they've been unhealthy and they've got poor information and education around the factors that they're looking to instill and behaviors for the last 15 or 20 years. So it's our ability to react to those. It's also the area of the brain that's kind of responsible for planning and impulse control. So impulsivity is going to be a big thing in regards to kind of the link between testosterone and that kind of increased risk appetite. Moving on to motivation and confidence. So high testosterone typically can be linked to feelings of confidence and assertiveness. So again, that kind of standing shoulders back, chest proud, okay? So which in turn is going to help you face challenges head on rather than avoiding them and shrinking in via and succumbing to them. So it's going to promote a proactive approach to problem solving, which from a resilience standpoint is going to be super important. So I always use a phrase, and I think I've used it to John already, and we've only had one call, is I always use a phrase, I'm proactive rather than reactive. And that's how you men want to live your life, like kind of being reactive to situations. Again, if we're looking at the central nervous system, leads to sympathetic dominance. And yes, although we want about 20-25% of our day in sympathetic dominance in certain areas, we don't want to spend all day there. So if we are very reactive to situations, then our sympathetic drive is going to be significantly higher than our parasympathetic drive. So kind of testosterone essentially is going to, I'm not going to say it's going to give you confidence, but can increase the potential feelings of confidence and assertiveness. So moving on to the next subheading, which is social cognition and dominance. So moving into competitive behavior. So testosterone itself can influence competitive and aggressive behavior. When I talk about aggressive here, I'm not just talking about kind of running for a brick wall. I'm talking about positive aggressive behavior. So basically what we can look at competitive behavior as is how it impacts individuals and how they evaluate social hierarchies and dominance. It can be linked to an increased desire for social status and power. So again, social status and power can be multifaceted. It doesn't have to just be linked to profession. It can be, again, in and around the gym. It can be being the leader of your family. All those sort of things are going to be prominent. Like Ben talks about it all the time, is our goal as men is to lead. Okay, so kind of testosterone and making sure we look after testosterone, it's going to kind of help us influence competitive decision making. And in regards to that desire for social status and power, again, be the men that we want to be, to lead the armies of friends and family that look up to us. Being a father myself, one of my biggest things is I want to be a role model for my son, and I want I have got a client of mine that his son thinks of him as a superhero. And kind of, I love that, because as human beings, kind of not just to close immediate family, but friends and people that see us, I want them to see us men as kind of leaders within what we do. And that can be professionally, that can be personally, and that can be derived by an aesthetic goal of how you look as well. Also, I put on there reduced empathy. So reading some research, kind of it's indicated that testosterone can lower empathy and essentially affect social cognition. Potentially, if I had to hazard a guess, it's going to be due to an increase in kind of dominance-driven behaviors that essentially prioritize the previous point of assertiveness and things like that. So again, for me, it can reduce empathy, but not to the point where we are unempathetic, but essentially with that balance and that kind of Newton's cradle, we need to make sure that we have that positive and negative balance as well. But it's just being creating an awareness of kind of where we stand in regards to, on the empathetic scale, and ensure that we understand that as well. So it again, kind of, it can lead us in regards to the structure around what you guys are currently trying to achieve. It's going to be a positive in regards to reducing empathy, because it can lead to you focus on things like your goals. Again, going back to problem solving, and in times of adversity, it may also create a challenge. It's going to be an inherently positive thing, okay? But what it can be, if you have a slight reduced empathy as well, it may create challenges in things like collaborative or emotionally nuanced situations. So it's looking at the positive and the negative to these, but understanding kind of that we have the power within our mind to choose where we sit on that scale. And I talk to my clients a lot about it in regards to kind of the only thing that we have control of in our life is what's between the ears. Everything outside of that is external and we have no control over. And I talk to my guys a lot about kind of certainty and uncertainty. Our generation and kind of humans nowadays try to create a lot of certainty in uncertain situations, which is an unrealistic expectation. So the only certainty that we have in life is how we carry ourselves and what goes on between our ears and what sort of information that we ingest. So for me, kind of, I talk a lot about kind of controlling what's in your control. And you, those of you guys that are sat here now, what's in your control as we sit here and speak? It's your actions. It's your actions. And again, this is not just stipulated to your training, your nutrition, it's your actions in the times that you're not undertaking training, when you're at work, when you're having in your personal relationships and all those sort of things. So for me, kind of understanding the scale and making sure you understand that whatever you guys have been through, going through, I don't want to spend all night going on this, but when you look at things like trauma and situations that have negatively affected us, we have the power to be able to change these situations, turn them not so much into a positive, but to learn from them and ensure that they never happen again. So this is what I talk about in regards to social cognition and dominance. Right, moving into the last little bit. So again, social dominance and support networks. Okay, so testosterone could and may enhance social behaviors such as leadership. So you've heard me say earlier on in the slideshows, I see everybody that's on this call and everybody listening to this call is leaders. Leaders of all sorts of rafts of different people, colleagues, kind of families, friends, all those sort of things. So kind of it's a positive that we want to enhance your social behaviors around leadership and you being leaders of whoever it is that you're designed to lead. Things like dominance, assertiveness, all of which are going to contribute to stronger social networks. These networks for you, and what can they provide you with? They can provide you with emotional and social support, which from a resilience standpoint are going to be vital. Again, talk to my clients all the time. I try to get the family involved, the wife, the children, because this journey can be very insular. And I've seen it throughout my 20-year career where people kind of are so focused on their goal that certain other areas of their life suffer. That doesn't have to be the case. You can incorporate and encourage everybody in your life to be a part of it. And the most important thing is the people that you speak to most or you spend most of your time with, you want them to be positively affected by you, but you want them to be a support in the days you don't feel your best and you need somebody to talk to, or you need to kind of let off some steam. My grandma used to say a problem shared is a problem halved. And this is so important in regards to ensuring that we have the support networks around us that are going to help amplify this journey, as opposed to being surrounded and engulfing ourselves with a lot of negative energy. Okay, so again, what are you in control of? You're in control of your social circle. If you've got friends and associates that all they seem to do is moan, that's a you problem. because you choose to be in that situation. And don't be surprised if that engulfs you. And again, from your own thought processes, that starts to negatively affect you. So creating an environment and spending time around people that lift you up, that you have inspiring conversations with, i.e. muscle intelligence. Like, I love going on our calls on a Tuesday and a Thursday with the guys and Josie and some of the girls jump on as well, and Matt's. And I love hearing everybody's wins. We do personal and professional wins at the start of every call. That reaffirms that positive mindset to be able to verbalize what you've done well for the day. A lot of you guys on your trackers have your daily wins. I stress to my guys how important ticking off your daily wins and seeing that sort of thing is going to be in regards to positive mental attitude. Okay. Moving into kind of memory and spatial abilities. So starting off with working memory. So studies show mixed effects typically of testosterone on working memory. In some cases, again, this is a positive and negative, testosterone can enhance working memory, while in some cases, high levels of testosterone can lead to reduced memory performance. Okay, again, this will be solely down to everybody's individual differences, and most importantly, testosterone sensitivity and baseline cognitive ability. So remember, no two people are the same. That's what makes us human. We're all unique in our own patterning. So no two people are the same. So understanding what works for you is going to be super important. And then the last one, I've decided to put it in there, is spatial abilities. So again, testosterone can and has been shown to positively impact spatial abilities, such as things like mental rotation. Okay, which again, for you guys, why will that be a benefit to you? In tasks like cognition that requires spatial awareness and navigation. So again, it's super important in regards to, again, where will we need spatial awareness and understanding around the body? Exercising. Okay, so that's going to be important from a spatial awareness and a spatial ability standpoint. And then moving into the last couple, before we go into the strategies, we're moving into analytical versus intuitive decision making. So we look at reduced cognitive reflection. So you notice there I've put reduced. Okay. So testosterone has sometimes been linked to a slight reduction in cognitive reflection. What is cognitive reflection? It's our ability to override that initial gut feeling that you get and allows us to engage in deeper, more analytical thinking. Okay. So what is this going to help us with? It's going to help us, it's going to lead to more intuitive, less deliberate decision-making. Let's face it. Those of you guys that have never made a mistake in your life and made an irrational decision, put your hands up. There's going to be nobody. So again, some of the research out there kind of will suggest that testosterone itself will and can reduce the reliance on that reflective thinking process, potentially, again, promoting a more automatic, instinct-driven choice, which is typically going to be the right choice and not the wrong choice. And then the last subheading is going to be around stress response and cognitive control. So again, we've spoke a lot about kind of the interaction of the nervous system. So testosterone itself interacts with one of the main stress hormones, which is cortisol. So kind of a slightly higher or optimal, shall we say, kind of testosterone level is going to enhance our resilience under stressful conditions. So again, it's going to aid in quick decision-making under pressure, may and sometimes can impair cognitive control when emotional or physical stress is high. So when our kind of functional capacity is really high, it can and may affect decision-making and cognitive control in those states. One important thing to note around kind of testosterone's link with cortisol is the enzymes and the pathways of both testosterone and cortisol that essentially regulate these hormones are interconnected. So think about it on Newton's cradle. So meaning if one kind of more than meaning that an imbalance in one of them often influences the other. So if you've got super high testosterone, potentially it may lead to a slightly reduced cortisol. Again, you've got significantly high cortisol. So again, those you guys that are really stressed, what that's going to potentially inhibit is the production of testosterone. So looking at the interconnecting links between all the systems is vitally important. So kind of understanding that cortisol and testosterone are intricately linked just because of the pathways that regulate these hormones. So we're going to talk about strategies to help those balance in a second, so we don't need to worry about that. And then cognitive flexibility to finish with. So testosterone itself may support cognitive flexibility. So what is cognitive flexibility? The ability to adapt thinking and behavior in response to changing circumstances. Okay. So the adaptability itself is going to aid with things like resilience by allowing us under significant times of stress to potentially reframe challenging situations and most importantly, more than anything, persist through setbacks. Everyone sat on this call has suffered some sort of setback on their journey up to this point. So it's our ability to stay cognitively flexible to be able to, again, identify the problem, the challenge, what we will do in that same situation that's essentially caused a setback and act differently next time. So again, the link between testosterone and cognitive flexibility is a big one because life's not always going to be sunshine and rainbows. Kind of, there's going to be some of you guys that are able to action stuff, but not without kind of increased compromise to other areas of your life. Whereas if we can kind of get everything balanced and ensure throughout times of stress and uncertainty, which again can be work schedule, can be something happening that throws you off where you can't work out, our ability to be cognitively flexible is going to be important to get over that setback and reframe a challenge. So that's it in regards to kind of that section. Up to this point, is there any questions? No, silence is a good
So
answer.
Dan, I have a question. So just, man, honestly, an incredible job. So much wisdom, so much, just like value. Of all the things you've said so far, what is one actionable thing that all of us can take right now and, apply to our lives? Obviously, much of it is circumstantial and contextual, but is there something you're like, hey, here's one thing we can do tomorrow to make sure that this sticks, right? Because this is a lot of great info, and I want to make sure that everyone has like one big takeaway. Maybe everyone could share one, actually. If ever you guys want to go and like share what you're going to take away, I'm happy to do the same.
No, love that, mate. I've got the strategies in regards to what we can do. But the most important, as I think I mentioned earlier on, I think the best thing that you guys can do is kind of understand the role and relationship between everything that I've spoken about tonight. And one of the biggest players in all the factors that we say speak about above is going to be two things: prioritize your sleep and reduce your stress, which are your top two strategies there. So again, this
Yeah,
simple
so
effective dose is going to be kind of doing the simple things that you see in front of you, which I said right at the start of the call. Hopefully a lot of you guys have already done most of these 6 points, but I think the biggest thing that you guys can do to help with, again, neurotransmitter control and the balancing of emotions and the stress around day-to-day life is going to be kind of definitely looking at stress and understanding what's essential and what's non-essential stress. And
Yeah.
more than I think just prioritizing sleep. Prioritizing sleep is going to be, and we spoke about it on the call on Tuesday, right, Ben, how important sleep is in an autoregulator for testosterone itself.
Yeah. So here's where I'm going with that, buddy. So you say prioritize sleep. You know what to do. I know what to do. These guys don't. In their mind, they prioritize sleep. They're like, ah, man, I make it a priority. Yeah, they still wake up feeling tired. They still wake up in the middle of the night, two times to pee. They still have a hard time shutting their mind down. How many of you guys would agree with that? Like you hear it, but do you have like some concrete things that we can action? Yeah, like man, I wake up 3 times a night, I wake up at 1 o'clock, my brain is spinning, I wake up, whatever, and I'm still tired. So we understand it, like we hear it, but I think everyone needs an individualized action item, right? And it's never the same thing for everybody. There's some general rules and principles for so-called sleep hygiene, but in general, what are the things that we need to be doing to prioritize sleep? I'll give you a couple guys, and Dan, you could chime in too. So the big one for me is so circadian rhythms determine near everything in your body, right? So for those of you who are new to this world, like when I wake up, my body should be releasing hormones that wake me up. Cortisol, adrenaline, these things wake me up. They tell my brain to be awake. They tell my body to be energized, alert, and active. And so the things that stimulate that in the morning are light, movement, and food. So we want to like get up. We want to see light. We want to move as much as possible. We want to create stress. We want to create, and not psychological stress. Now we got to differentiate between psychological stress and physical stress, right? We live in this world that's got an abundance of psychological stress and no physical stress. So you think of like evolutionarily, we would have lots of physical stress, lots of movement, lots of fighting, lots of whatever, not a lot of mental stress. Now it's the opposite. So we sit in our cars and we're psychologically stressed. We sit at our computers and we're psychologically stressed. So your brain thinks there's the lion, but your body goes, I'm in a hammock, right? And so that metabolic disconnect between your body and your mind causes obesity, causes insulin resistance, causes cortisol resistance. So we got to do first thing in the morning. You got to create that morning routine of getting up, seeing sunshine, and moving your body. So your body's cells are more receptive to nutrients. And by doing that, you set this cascade in motion that says, hey, it's time to wake up now. And when the sun starts to set, you do the opposite. You start slowing down, you start dimming the lights, you start doing things that are relaxing rather than stimulating. And so if you guys want to start shifting the quality and rejuvenation aspects of your sleep, you have to use that morning effectively and then use that night effectively, the so-called bookends of your day. Most of you guys have heard this already, but that's a super actionable thing. Hopefully that all makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Obviously, you tied it towards the end. I say to the biggest thing that's helped a lot of my guys, which a lot of you guys probably hopefully have already got instilled, is have a regular bedtime. It's kind of, and stick to that kind of like glue and ensure the last part of your evening, as Ben said, you are winding down. Because going back to talking about the nervous system, kind of what we want is everything stimulatory out of your body. And ensure that kind of you are giving your body the opportunity to rest, because a lot of people's problem is kind of the psychology behind getting to sleep, and they're not asleep within 20 minutes and then they're worrying about it. So simple things like little bit of meditation, breathing, kind of, they're all going to be massive factors. Like we talk a lot about breathing, meditation, again, in a morning gratitude journey, but those sort of things are simply actionable, but have made a massive difference to kind of how I sleep. I've had a very stressful year this year, and kind of implementing meditation practices, breath work, kind of continuously have helped massively to calm my system. I'm very adrenaline derived, with being quite tall, quite thin, kind of I turn a lot of things over very quickly, but also being quite psychologically stimulated. And I find that kind of really calming that system with kind of breathing and meditative practices in the evening are fantastic to just calm that nervous system and allow yourself, without any supplements to begin with, these things that obviously your coaches can talk to you about, but just calm that system. And it's the same with stress. So with sleep, with stress, the same modalities are the same. I'd encourage you guys, and I implement this with a few of my guys during work. So a lot of you guys will have very kind of stressful jobs. Okay, implementing breathing strategies in times of stress at work and multiple times throughout the day are going to have a profound effect on kind of calming that nervous system. Again, with the breath work, I always recommend that guys do that, because during the day, they won't stop and do breath work. So a great time to do your things like your breath work to calm the nervous system is before meals. So you know that you eat on a regular schedule. Well, I hope you all guys eat on a pretty regular schedule. Just take 2 minutes before, or 5 minutes before you eat, to kind of do your breath work and kind of just calm those systems down. And they're quite easily and actionable from a stress and sleep perspective that you can implement. As Ben said, taking control of the first 2 hours of the day, the last 2 hours of the day are your biggest wins in regards to what I said about controlling what you can control, but then adding little bits in kind of during the day that are going to kind of amplify those as you move into the mornings and the nights to have a more profound effect. Have you guys got any questions off the back of everything that we've just spoke about, kind of? And it'd be great for you guys to kind of give us a few takeaways from today, or anything you want a little bit more clarification on, or some of the parts today that you may be not actioning and you've heard today that you're going to be actioning. Right, as it's your first call, John, I'm gonna. Oh, is John gone? As it's your. No, it's yeah. Sorry, you moved on my screen, John. As it's your first call today, buddy, I want to hear from you. Kind of how is that for you? And is there some things that you have heard, haven't heard in there today? You're just on mute. You're just on mute, buddy.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, mate. Yeah.
Okay, good. I've been impressed with the program so far. I don't know if they change. You'd ask me if there's a change in energy, and I don't think there's a change in energy, but there is a change in my sense of being present, and a change in my ability not to give in to distraction. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, perfect. So decision making and everything we spoke about in regards to, and again, as we're going to talk about on our calls, it's just important that kind of this process, and for all you guys listening, this process is about you, and it's making the best decisions that serve you and everything that you see your future self wanting, as opposed to, as I said, that dopamine hit that I spoke about earlier on, where it's a quick fix for that minute of pleasure, which then long term creates kind of a longer term of pain if you're unhappy with how you look, how you feel, and more importantly, specific to your situation, the energy that you're looking to get, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, perfect, mate. Thank you very much. Anybody else kind of got any closing thoughts or any questions I want to ask myself or Ben while we're on here?
I had a quick
Someone.
question. Oh, go
Go
ahead.
ahead, man. Go ahead, Dustin. No, you're good, buddy.
Okay. No, hey, I just had a quick question, like in regards to the testosterone balance. So I'm in a situation where I have, super high, a total testosterone that's really high, but my free test is like super low. So I know that the free test is good for muscle tissue building. When it comes to the cognitive type stuff, are you still measuring off of the free testosterone, or how does that total testosterone come into play? Because I know a doctor will see the total testosterone is super high and you're healthy as a horse. It doesn't seem like a lot of the normal type doctors will kind of look at that measurement. So I was just kind of curious your guys' thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I'll give you some perspective, Dustin. So, free testosterone is a calculated measure. It's actually not something that's specifically measured in the blood. It's a calculated measure based on three factors: total testosterone, sex hormone binding globulin, and albumin. So, if your sex hormone binding globulin is high, your free testosterone will be low. So, if albumin is high, your free testosterone will be low. So, we have to look at why are those two numbers high. That's a different game to play, right? So, people think that free testosterone is actually measurable. It's not. It's just an extrapolation of three variables. So, your total testosterone is high. That's great. That means the other two are too high: SHBG and albumin. So, we have to measure those, and we have to say, well, why is my SHBG and albumin high? Because that's what's bringing down your free testosterone. So generally, we look at things like insulin resistance. We look at things like inflammation, and so we would look at other markers. Maybe even look at kidney function and say, like, hey, what else in my blood is actually driving these other markers up? So I would say if you're not already connected with Coach Greg or Dr. Jacques, get connected with them and let's actually look a little bit deeper because it's probably some simple stuff, man. So when your free testosterone is low, the first thing it will go to is like, is your diet on point? Is your stress on point? Is your sleep on point? It's usually an environmental thing. Then we start looking at some simple supplements you can take, right? You can take zinc, boron, and magnesium. Those three minerals are super important for bringing down SHBG. Then we can also look at taking something called Tongkat Ali, which can drop down your SHBG a little bit and actually drive up luteinizing hormones. So that'll give your testosterone even more of a bump. So that would be my suggestion, man. I would just approach. So you want supplements, I just gave you four. If you want lifestyle interventions, look to see, make sure your sleep and stress are on point, and then drop your inflammation. Did you get all that, man? Sorry, I see you trying to like put your ear up against the phone.
Yeah, I got it. No, my speaker quit working, so now to hear it, I've got to put my ear up. But no, yeah, I got all of that, and my SHGB is actually like a 90, so it's super high. I'm guessing, and I'm gonna have Greg will be my coach, so he's gonna look over all that stuff, and we'll get that dialed in. But it's just an interesting
Sure.
situation. I kind of thought, I guess it's pretty common though.
You know what? We're going to study. I'm actually going to have myself and Greg put an article together in the next 7 days for SHBG, man, because it's a really interesting one. There's no supplements that I found that'll drop SHBG. It's only lifestyle and pharmaceuticals that I found so far. You know, you could take something called stinging nettle that can drop it a little bit, but generally not much. That like those minerals do it a little bit, but yeah, we'll see, man. I'm going to do a little bit more digging and see if I can find something that's proven to sort of drop SHBG. SHBG is just like, think of nature's way of not allowing your testosterone to be too high. So if you're stressed, if you're inflamed, if you're not sleeping well, your body jacks up SHBG. Your body goes, now's not a good time for you to be too aggressive, right? So you have to look at what's the body kind of telling us. So that's what we're going to, I'll look at it this week, and we'll put it together. In the next 7 to 14 days, we'll have an article out for you.
Sounds good. And I'm thinking maybe gut health might play effect in that too. So I've got a GI sure map. I'm actually going to do it.
Yeah, for sure it does, man.
All right. Thank you.
Did you have a question, Des?
Yeah, just when you touched on the amygdala and the fear response, I've just read a book, the James Nestor book by Breathe, and he talked about this woman with a malfunctioning like amygdala, and she never had a fear response. And then when they restricted her oxygen to breathe, that's when she finally got a fear response from it. I was just wondering if there's anything, like when you do get that fear response from your amygdala, if there's anything you can kind of like tune into to make it like less prominent. Like, for example, I'll just use first T nerves. Like you have that fear response on like the first T, like, mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can tap into besides breath work that kind of controls that fear response?
Physiological side, it does. So the physiological side is two breaths, followed by a long inhale. So it's that's the fastest way to get out of sort of like an anxiety response. So inhale, pause, inhale more, then let it go. Always through your nose. So that's the most effective way that we know so far to sort of get you out of that anxiety response. That would be one. And the second one I would say is breath holds. So any type of accumulation of carbon dioxide generally will improve your ability to tolerate carbon dioxide. So what you'll find, if you get stressed, you feel anxious, what happens to your breathing? It becomes very shallow and very fast. So we want to do the opposite. We want to slow down your exhales. Hold your breath. Inhale, slow as you can. Short, exhale as long as you can. So the inhales are short, the exhales are long with a pause, because you're actually trying to not get a huge amount of oxygen in and slowly let the oxygen out, or excuse me, slowly let the CO2 out and then hold. So the protocol is, if you want the exact rep count or number count, we would do a 6 to 8 second exhale, a 4 second pause and a 3 second inhale. So short 2-3 second inhale. So you're barely getting a little bit sip of air in, and then you're pushing all the air out. And it's going to be hard because you're going to want to like, you want to gasp, but you got to control the gasp.
Thanks.
Pleasure, buddy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So I did a podcast with Dr. Justin Feinstein. Look up Dr. Justin Feinstein. He's your guy. He's the world expert on anxiety and how to overcome it. And so he's an advocate for like float tanks and CO2 tolerance and breath work. And Dr. Justin Feinstein, he's out of California, but now he lives in Hawaii. He's your man.
All right, gentlemen.
I hear pouring rain behind me.
Hmm?
I said, I'm here in Costa Rica and I hear it pouring rain.
Mate, I'd rather be in Costa Rica in the pouring rain than in the UK in the pouring rain, and Des will back on that one as well.
I got a whole extra house for you, bro. I got a whole extra unit above me. I'm waiting for you. It's your name on it.
Right, guys. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming tonight. I hope you find value in everything. As I've always said, kind of if you guys have any questions around the back of it and kind of you want any more information, then yep. Sorry, TK, I just saw you put your hand up. You okay, bud?
No, there's a clap.
Oh, it's a clap. Okay, sorry. I can't differentiate from the emojis yet. I'm not quite technically astute enough to differentiate them yet. But yeah, kind of thank you for attending. And those of you guys that are going to watch this on record, I hope it takes value. If you do need anything, got any questions, please feel free to drop us a message. But have a great day, evening, wherever you are in the world. And I look forward to speaking to you all soon.
Incredible job, man. Thanks, guys.
Take care, guys.